Brett, sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com. Designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbour Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Look out. There's only films to be buried with.
Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a paleontologist, and I love films. As Jose N. Harris once said, tears shed for another person are not a sign of weakness, they're a sign of a pure heart. And if another person in real life doesn't make you cry, try watching the film All of Us Strangers. It's fucking beautiful. If you're not a wreck seeing that, you're probably a sociopath, so good luck finding out. Every week, I invite a special guest over, I tell them they've died, then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Barry Jenkins, Sharon Stone, Jamila Jamil, and even Cled Blambles. But this week, it's the brilliant comedian, writer, and actor, Joelkin Booster. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you get extra chat, you get a secret from Joel, you get us talking about the beginnings and endings of film, you get the whole episode uncut and ad-free, and there's a video. Check all of that out over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. Also, I have extended my American stand-up tour, so if you're in America and you're in a place, I'm probably playing it. Look it up on the internet. Come and see me. We'll have a ride old time. So, Joelkin Booster is a brilliant stand-up, movie star, and writer. He wrote the brilliant film Fire Island. He's very good at every single thing he does. You know him. You love him. We've recorded this on Zoom very recently. He's got a new show coming out, which we talk about on the podcast. I really think you're going to enjoy this one. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 282 of Films to be Buried With. Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. It is I, Brett Goldstein, and I am joined today by an actor, a writer, a producer, a podcaster, a stand-up comedian, an award winner, a legend, a hero, a looter, a Fire Islander, a big mouther, a everythinger. There's nothing he can't do. Here he is. I can't believe he's here. Can you believe he's here? He is. So get used to it. Here he is. He's here right now. It's Mr. Joelkin Booster.
Oh, wow. What an intro. I don't, you know, people always say this when they're being introed on podcasts, but I don't think I've ever had a better one. I did get a little frightened. I didn't realize what you were going with, but when you said he's a looter, I was like, oh my God. I was like, what did I get caught on camera doing? How does he know?
Let's talk about January 6th.
But then I caught on. So it's been good. I'm so happy to be here.
It's lovely to see you.
I will say right off the bat, though, I have had the flu all week, and I had the best of intentions of like coming in here, like super prepped with an answer, like with a really thought out answer for every one of the movies. But aside from listening to a bunch of episodes of your podcast, I did none of that work. So a lot of these answers will be fully off the top of my head and just by instinct alone. So if you're listening to this and you have or worked on one of the movies or love one of the movies that I talk about here, please know that it is just my gut, going with my gut here for every answer.
I love it. What I will say is, if you choose to do it this way, and some people do, it's brilliant. It'll be brilliant. But in 4 days, I guarantee you're going to text me, oh my God, oh, why didn't I say this
absolutely.
Film?
I know.
People are going to think I don't know about that film. How are you? What are you doing? Have you been doing more Loop? What are you doing? Where are you? What's happening in your life?
We finished with Loop before the break. Obviously, I only had like 5 days left to shoot on it after post-strike because we got most of it done at the beginning of last year. And then the strike, of course, had other plans. But no, I mean, let's see. What did I do? I was in Mexico City for New Year's, had a friend's wedding there, spent New Year's there. Incredible city, beautiful city. Like one of the most beautiful North American cities I've ever been to. Just like truly remarkable in every way. Food, culture, shopping, you know, just like the aesthetic of the city itself is so beautiful and wild and urban at the same time. It's really, really great. And then this is sort of, I think I was telling you before we got on, this is kind of the first thing I've had to do since getting back. I went to the Creative Arts Emmys, the Schmemmys, over the weekend. Got the flu.
How was it? Oh, you got the flu at the Emmys?
Yeah, that's where we think I got it. Yeah, it was interesting. It was interesting to be at the non-televised Emmys. Mm. And just like the different vibe.
Is it wilder?
Yeah, it's the Wild Wild West compared to the televised Emmys. You know, everybody knows that there aren't really cameras on them for this one. And so everyone's sort of letting loose in a way they wouldn't normally. Not really, obviously. I will say it was funny. They gave, you know, the Creative Arts Emmys, I'm so glad that they exist to honor people in departments that don't normally get honored at award shows, or you at least don't see them televised at all. But then they proceeded to give every like costume designer like roughly 25 seconds to speak before they started playing them off. And so it felt sort of like a double, insult to injury sort of situation where they're like, we're not going to put you on TV. And also for this event that could technically go as long as we wanted it to be, we're only giving you 20 seconds before we play you off.
We're here to honor you. We don't want to see you and we don't want to hear you, but we're here to honor you.
Yeah, which ultimately, like, you know, after I've been gay for most of my life and I obviously have seen a lot of acceptance speeches because of that. And honest, at this point, I would like to hear what the production designer for The Last of Us has to say over, you know, I don't need to hear Laura Linney give another speech. I love her, but, you know, let me hear what the ladies who costumed Beef have to say, you know?
You made the film Fire Island, which is excellent. Sir. Are you going to do more films? Right? Have you got more films that you have written?
Yeah, actually. So I am working on my next one right now, and it is technically sold to a place, a studio, and we're working on whether or not it's actually going to happen, you know, that arduous process right now. And I'm excited about it. This one's a wedding comedy. And so it's actually much smaller in scope than Fire Island. But what I hope to do, because, you know, everybody is up my ass about, you know, oh, is there going to be a Fire Island sequel, which I think people think they want because and I'm so appreciative of it because it means they like the first movie, the Fire Island in general. But I don't think you can name a lot of great comedy sequels. You know, like when I think of comedy sequels, other than I can think of one standout one, but I tend to think of like Miss Congeniality 2 or Legally Blonde 2.
Legally Blonde 2.
Red, White, and Blonde.
Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me.
You know, that could be an example of a good one. I think they work better when they're sort of cartoons to begin with.
Yeah.
You know, like they're not, like Austin Powers 2 is not necessarily concerned with continuity with its other movies, you know? Like that's not the kind of movie it is. And so I think when you can be a movie that sort of exists outside of continuity, it's a little bit easier. And I think most of but like in terms of like grounded comedies, it's really hard to jump back into those worlds. Like the one that I can think of that is really good that surpasses the original maybe is Sister Act 2.
Well, I guess because I was just thinking about like Bridget Jones's Diary, which is also a take on Pride and Prejudice.
On Pride and Prejudice,
Fire Island. And I guess the issue with a sequel is you sort of have to break everyone up again and and we like them being together. It is tricky.
Yeah. I've always said that like if I ever had like an amazing idea for this story for a sequel, then I would consider it. But I'm not gonna, you know, because like Fox Searchlight and Hulu, they were down. They were like asking me about sequel stuff when the movie first came out. And I was like, well, I'm not going to reverse engineer it. I'm not going to be like, okay, I have to write a sequel. What should it be? You know, like if I come up with what it should be, then I will write the sequel. But I think what I ultimately hope to do that I think will scratch a lot of people's, that itch for a lot of people, is I'm just going to keep casting the same people in my
movies. Oh, yeah, that's great.
Like have a little...
That's the way to have a light troupe.
Yeah, like I, you know, Christopher Guest did it. And I think like nobody needs a sequel to Best in Show, but we have... You know, For Your Consideration and Guffman and all these other movies and A Mighty Wind, where we get to hang out with essentially the same people.
That's what...
Again, and I think that's what people were drawn to about Fire Island. And I think like the chemistry of those characters and us as real life friends and actors, like I think that's what people really appreciated about that movie. Yeah. And I think I can better honor that by just making better, like continuing to make new movies, new stories, and just reusing the same people that I love to work with so much. And
that's fucking smart. That is smart. Yeah. I really like Fire Island, and I really like respected how, I hate to use this word, but I'm going to use it, raunchy. Uh-oh. It was raunchy.
Yeah,
it was a right old raunchy film. That's so rare. I'm really interested in how rare sort of sex stuff is in mainstream cinema. And I wondered if that was something you had to fight for, or if everyone was on board from the beginning, or it was a problem.
You know, there were at least like two sex scenes cut out.
All right.
But we're still the first orgy on Disney Plus internationally. So, you know, we lost some battles, but we won the war. I think
we won the orgy.
It is funny. People have said this, what you just said to me before, but I also get a lot of flack for it not being sexy enough, which is so funny to me. Like, for as much as my characters talk about sex in that movie, no one's fucking really out of the main cast. It is like periphery, and like it's like little hookups here and there. So yeah, I hope to include even more explicit X-rated red band sex in my next movie.
Yeah. Last place I saw you was at Largo, where it was your excellent stand-up show. You did 45 minutes, which you said was new, but it was so good. I was like, this can't be new. It's too good. But are you going on tour? Are you doing a new tour?
Yeah, I just did a show in Seattle last weekend, and I'm going to San Francisco next weekend and doing a lot of like, I'm doing like a little mini Pacific Northwest tour in February, where I'll probably hit like Portland and Vancouver and just trying to hit all of the Pacific Northwest really for now. And then, yeah, it really depends on what happens with this movie, I guess. It sort of shapes the rest of my year as a stand-up. That's like... The most frustrating thing, and I'm sure you understand, is that like I came up as a stand-up and that's all I ever did. And then the more successful I became as a stand-up, the less I'm able to do stand-up, which is the funny sort of catch-22 being successful in this industry, is you come up as a stand-up and then suddenly as soon as you hit a certain level of success, everybody asks you to do everything but stand-up. And don't get me wrong, I'm really grateful for all the work outside of stand-up that I'm able to do. I love to write, I love to act. And those other things, unfortunately, happen to pay a lot more than stand-up traditionally does. So yeah, it is funny, but I will continue to do stand-up until I have nothing left to say, I guess. But for now, it's definitely like sort of a privilege to find time in my schedule to be able to do it.
I don't think you're ever going to run out of things to say. I keep thinking about this. This is Billy Joel, right? The greatest, Billy Joel. Mm-hmm. He wrote a song called Famous Last Words on his River of Dreams album, which is the last song. And in Famous Last Words, he says, these are the last words I have to say. And then ever since, he's only written classical music. He hasn't written a new song with lyrics since. And that was like 20 years ago or something. And I'm like, you really? You didn't have anything else to say? I don't believe you.
I wonder if he regrets that now. Like, I wonder if part of him is like, I do have a couple songs, but...
Yeah, I always think, I bet you guys, fuck, I shouldn't have said that.
I said the thing, so put the nail in the coffin prematurely.
And he's a man of his word, and I respect it.
Yeah. I don't know, though, because here's the thing. Like, I will say this, like, it's already, the way my life has shifted in the last 5 or so years, it's already become harder to find things to talk about that I think will be universal or relatable, you know? Because like the more, like when I was coming up in New York and I was working 50 hours a week and then going to open mics at night And like, I had a regular desk job. I was paying rent. I was miserable. I was broke. You know, I was desperate. And like, those were the golden years for me in terms of joke writing. Like, I think like all my best jokes came from that period of my life. And now that I'm like comfortable and not fighting for my life every day and don't have a regular job anymore, like I can feel sort of the zone of interest sort of shrinking and shrinking around the kinds of things that I want to talk about. And I just don't, like, you do see some of these uber wealthy comics get to a certain point where it's like, oh, you're not even dealing with regular human beings anymore. Like you obviously don't have anything pertinent to say, to speak to the average person's, you know, life experience anymore. And I don't want to be one of those comics. Like I actually do want to, I want to pull a Billy Joel and be like, okay, I think I've got it. I've reached that point. I'm too rich. I'm too successful. I'm too comfortable to have anything interesting to say anymore. And I'm just going to enjoy that. I'm going to enjoy my time and my money and my comfort instead of trying to pretend like I have any basic understanding of the suffering that's going on in this country anymore.
Pull a Billy Joel.
Yeah.
I love it. Joking booster. I've forgotten to tell you something. It's really annoying because I should have told you at the beginning of the podcast.
Oh, fuck.
And I should have told you when I logged on. I'm so sorry. I just have to say it because otherwise it's going to be awkward. You've died. You're dead.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so sad.
It is sad. It is sad.
You had so much left to do.
I know. You hadn't pulled your Billy Joel yet.
Yeah.
How did you die?
I died in, it was a car accident and I was in an Uber. I wasn't even driving. It was an Uber pool. We weren't even on the way to my destination. We were on the way to someone else's destination. Yeah.
And I bet you still gave 5 stars.
Oh, always, always.
Yeah. How many in the car?
It was packed to the gills. There were 4 of us, 4 passengers. 4 passengers in a Corolla.
Did it happen quick or?
Oh, no, it was painful and it was long. And I had to wait for 2 other people to die before I was allowed to die.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's terrible. The queue.
That's terrible. Do you worry about death?
I worry about death constantly. Yeah. And it's weird. So I've been dating my boyfriend for coming up on 3 years now. And it's weird when you are in love with someone, how I've been so death neurotic my entire life. Like since I was a child, I think about my own death constantly. And that, but like in the last couple of years, it has shifted entirely to me thinking about his death constantly.
Mm.
And like worrying about like—
That's love. That's
losing
love.
Losing him and like, yeah, it is. It's so morbid, but it is a sign for me that I am deeply and truly in love with this person is because I am thinking so much more about his death than mine. It's like bad because I'm always like, should I be putting this out into the universe? Like this energy?
No, this is safe. This is keeping it safe.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I could make myself cry in front of you today if I thought about him dying, which I do constantly. I am like, I'll wake up in bed and I'll like see him there sleeping and I'll just stare at him sleeping for like 20 minutes running through all the ways he could die that day. And then just weeping silently while I wait for him to wake up. And then he'll like oftentimes like wake up and be like, what is wrong with you? What's going on? What is this vibe I'm waking up into?
What's an average amount of ways you imagine him dying in a morning? Like, do you keep coming up with more and more obscure ways to die?
Oh, more elaborate every time, more ridiculous every time. Like there is no end to my creative imagination around the ways my boyfriend could die or be maimed.
Well, that seems like a good use of your time and brain.
Yeah.
I get it. Do you then follow it through to like what you'd say at the funeral and things
absolutely.
Like that?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, I have a document on my Google Drive that is frequently updated with all the information for what I want to happen at my funeral.
Tell me everything, please.
It's just like music choices, pallbearers, people I want to speak, people I want to perform and or sing and or read.
What's the song as your coffin is brought in?
So I want it all to be house music, like disco house music. And I think it would be sort of funny, sort of cringy, sort of corny, but so appropriate if they played Last Dance as they're bringing in my coffin. It's like a little too on the nose, but also because it was so prominently featured in my movie and it's one of my favorite songs of all time. I think that is like, that's sort of where we're at right now. But again, in a couple of years, that could change. There could be a more iconic song that I would like associated with my death. But this is a fun thought exercise.
Yeah.
I like to stop sometimes and think, like, if I were to get married today, who in my life would be in my wedding party? And it's a really clarifying thought exercise because it really makes you think of like the people not only that you're close to that would want to do something like that, but like sort of the symbolism around the people that you choose. Like, who am I choosing today? And if you're already married and can't do this thought exercise, do the same thing, but with your pallbearers. If you were to die today, who would be carrying the casket? Really think about that.
Great question.
Yeah. And would it be the same people that you would have stand up for you in your wedding? That's another question. Because then with pallbearers, you have to think about, you know, height differentials, who's strong enough to do it, you know, all that.
Are they the same people you would call to bring a shovel to meet you in the desert, you know?
That's a really, actually, that's a wrinkle to the thought exercise I had never thought of before. It's definitely going to be added into my daily thought exercise now.
Because it might not be. You might actually go like, I don't want to let those people know about what happened in the desert.
No, absolutely. And like, honestly, like I was talking to my boyfriend about this recently where I was like, the person that I would have be my best man now isn't someone that I would consider necessarily even my best friend, but just like the person that I trust the most to be able to handle all of the bullshit jobs that go along with being best man. You know,
surely it's like the best comedian, you know, that's your best.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Who's going to give the best speech, but also be able to handle organizing a bachelor party and like the duties of being a best man and all of that. Cause it's not always, it doesn't always align the way you think it will.
What do you think happens after you die? Think there's an afterlife?
Oh, it's so tough because I grew up very, very Christian, very evangelical, very conservative. And so like, there's always this part of my brain that like, would love to believe that heaven and hell exist, but I don't. I don't think there is necessarily an afterlife. I do think that like, you know, it was funny. I once interviewed for a comedy show, this ghost debunker who like goes around and debunks ghosts and things like that. But his thing isn't that like, oh, it's the pipes or the electricity or whatever. His thing is that like, when something really awful happens surrounding your death, if it's like emotionally traumatic or violent and full of hate, you know, as a lot of murders are or something, like that leaves an energetic imprint on the space. And so what people are experiencing is often not like someone's consciousness that is living on past death, but sort of like an echo or like an imprint of energy that was left in that space when something really, really traumatic or violent happens. And like, I don't know, that is sort of what I sort of buy, is that we might not live on, our consciousnesses might not live on completely intact. Like I might not be a conscious ghost walking around being like, this is my unfinished business and I'm gonna like observe everything that's going on. In the meantime, it might just be like a feedback loop of whatever emotion I was feeling surrounding my death. And that is like being played over and over again in this space. Because I've experienced things before in the past that I can't quite explain, you know, in quote unquote haunted spaces. And like, I'm hard pressed to believe that ghosts exist, but I do believe that like energy does affect spaces like that.
Can you tell me one thing that happened in a haunted place?
We were in the hotel where The Shining took place. And we were staying there. And we were staying in like specifically one of the rooms that on TripAdvisor was widely believed to be haunted. And again, this could be an electricity thing, but like you could just feel something in that room was off even before we knew that it was one of the haunted rooms. And I just remember like washing my face, turning off the light, going to bed, and then the full switch just flipping up and turning on. And it wasn't an electrical issue. It wasn't like the switch had always been up. And then like, I don't know. It was just like really weird. And you could just, and we never felt alone in that room.
I love it.
It was very, very creepy. And I remember going to the front desk and being like, room 13, like, no, oh, this is what we asked. We were like, oh, like this hotel isn't really haunted, is it? And he was like, no, no, of course not. Like the night manager was like, that's ridiculous. Like this hotel isn't haunted. Well, unless you're talking about room 13, which is, of course, the room we were staying in, you know? I don't remember if it was room 13 or what number it was, but he just said verbatim our room. Wow. And I was like, oh, this is fucked.
I love it.
But again, really, really violent murder-suicide happened in that room.
Yeah, it'd have to be.
Yeah.
Well, listen up. There's news.
Okay.
There is a heaven, after all. And you're in it. They're very excited to have you there. You get right in. They love you there. It's filled with your favorite thing. What's your favorite thing?
Drugs.
Okay. It's absolutely filled with drugs. There are drugs. Yeah. As far as it is, like a candy shop for drugs. Drugs. Wow. You're sitting on drugs. There's so many drugs.
And I'm already dead, so nothing bad can happen to me.
Nothing bad can happen. There's no come down. This is just all come up.
The one downside to drugs, gone. Amazing.
Oh, it's amazing. It's just like, and it's like pure shit. Like, this is good drugs. And everyone is very excited to see you, as they will be. They're all high. And they want to know about your life, but they want to know about your life through film. And the first thing these druggies want to know is, what is the first film you remember seeing, Joel Kim Booster?
The first film, so there's a couple of answers to this, two answers to this. One answer is like the first movie I can like consciously remember watching a scene from, which is Beauty and the Beast, the Disney movie.
One of the all-time greats.
I remember specifically being terrified by the opening. Yeah, the prologue to that movie with the witch and everything like that. I remember being terrified by like the pane glass windows, depicting what happened, what went down. So that's the first movie I can remember seeing. The first movie I remember seeing in theaters, that was The Santa Claus with Tim Allen.
Great film.
And that, I think, is the first movie we saw in theaters that I can remember.
Do you remember thinking, I want in on this?
I don't think so quite yet, especially not with Beauty and the Beast, because I wasn't a moron and I knew I couldn't be in that film because it was cartoons that were in that film.
Well, you were very ahead of your time.
I didn't understand about voice acting yet. Had no idea what went on to get those cartoons on the screen, but just knew it couldn't be me. And then I found Tim Allen to be pretty repulsive from the jump. Even as a child, I knew something was off there and I had no interest in being in sharing a space with him.
Okay.
Even as much as I love that film.
It's a great film. What is the film that made you cry the most? Are you a crier?
I am. I'm a big triumph crier. This is not my answer, but this is a good example of a film that a moment that I've cried in a movie that like this kind of moment will always get me. And that is when they save Matt Damon in The Martian, when it like, when the plan goes off without a hitch.
You like it.
Like when that moment happens and like, they're all like, yes, we did it. Sob, full sobbing in the theater, cannot control myself. The movie that I've cried the hardest to, and it's because there's like a lot of contextual things that are surrounding that. A, I'd just been broken up with. B, I was on an airplane. C, it was the first time I'd ever seen this film, When Harry Met Sally. At the end, lost my goddamn mind on that flight to the point where the woman sitting next to me was like, are you okay? Like, it was such an awful time in my life romantically. And right. I just remember like I was flying to LA for a job, like my second writing job ever. And I was like, oh, I'll check out this When Harry Met Sally bullshit. I love Nora Ephron, whatever. And I just like could not compute the romance and the happiness and the, you know, all of it in the midst of my own heartbreak and the altitude, which I've heard, I've since heard like maybe not, might not be a thing as much as people say it is, that like the altitude makes you cry easier.
Then why is everyone crying in the,
I don't know, but I just anecdotally will say I haven't cried that hard in a movie ever since. So maybe it was all breakup, but I do think it part of, I'm going to blame the altitude on part of it.
There has to be. I'm always crying on a plane. There has to be something in it.
Drop of a hat. What movie did I cry at that was like super embarrassing? I think it was like Bumblebee or like one of the Transformers movies. Fully cried. I think like Pacific Rim 2, I got a little misty-eyed, you know, like... There are certain movies that you only watch on planes and like I would only watch on a plane. And when those types of movies are getting me, I'm like, fuck the altitude.
There's something here. What is the film that scared you the most? Do you like being scared?
I do like being scared. I love horror movies.
Right.
There's, again, like kind of two answers to this. The first movie that ever made me that I remember being like, oh God, this is like really scary in a way that was like kind of unique for the time because we were coming out of torture porn era in around like 2007, 2008. And I hated, like when I was in high school in the early 2000s, like everything was about like, this is a horror movie where we watch a young model scream in pain and agony for 40 minutes while someone like cuts off their leg. And I fucking hated that shit so much. I think Saw is like maybe gets a slight pass because there is interesting like narrative stuff going around it. But like Hostel, I think like that is like peak that kind of movie that I fucking hated. And then as we were coming out of that era, though, there's a lot of interesting stuff coming out of your neck of the woods. And this movie, The Descent. Do you know this movie?
I fucking love The Descent. I think it's a masterpiece.
I fucking love this movie. And it was a movie that like at the time I remember it taught me a lot of patience because it takes a while to get to the scary parts of The Descent. It is like, it's very like these women listening to Indigo Girls in a cabin, like about to girl boss their way through a cave. And you're like, okay, this seems fine. And then that's the second that fucking face creature pops it's up so behind scary. That woman. It's you're off to the races and it's so scary. And I remember it was like such a nice reprieve from the kind of horror movies that had been coming out that I had been seeing it at that time. And I fucking love that movie. I tell everyone to watch it. It's still, it holds up so well.
So good.
It was interesting, complicated characters, but like simple storytelling. Yeah. You know, it really was just them trying to get out of that fucking cave.
And he does a thing. I'm sure I've talked about this before, but I really, I'm like, why is that film so good? And it's one of the things he did is he doesn't cheat. Where the light comes from, there's no fake light in the whole film. So it's a flame. If they're holding a torch, that's the light. And if they're if it's the screen from their phone, that's the light. There's no like, where's this light coming from?
Yeah, yeah,
it's really fucking great. What is the film that you love? People don't really like it. The critics hate it, but you love it.
This is one I actually did think about while I was listening to one of your episodes recently, because this is, I think, like, this is one of the marquee questions of your podcast, I think. Like, this is one that I think is really, really telling about where a person is in their life.
Yeah.
And for me, this movie is Jupiter Ascending.
Amazing answer.
The Wachowskis, like, they honestly, in my mind, they can't do any wrong. Because the thing is I would much rather a creator take a huge swing and miss and whiff the ball completely. Like, the ball is, like, in another county at this point. But they took, man, do they make big fucking swings. And that movie is so fun and so dumb. And Eddie Redmayne is giving one of the most insane performances ever committed to film. And like the fact that people didn't see it, didn't appreciate it.
Channing Tatum is a dog.
Channing Tatum is a dog. Mila Kunis is queen of the bees.
Is a fox. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you do an impression of Eddie Redmayne in it?
I can't now because I'm sick and I also don't want to blow out my microphone. But the way he unhinges his jaw to scream most of his lines is really amazing. Those little dragons with the little tiny wings that are the henchmen that are like, they never really explain where they came from, where they're going, what they're doing. Like, it's so much more than a bad Star Wars ripoff, but it is like in that realm for sure. And I just find their world building so funny and fascinating always. And just goofy as hell. And the rollerblading, the anti-gravity rollerblades, like it's just so fun and so visually fun and stupid. And like, yeah, it's a movie that I have a lot of trouble convincing people to watch with me for sure.
That is in the realm of Cloud Atlas, which I feel the same way about. Cloud Atlas is swinging away.
The thing is about Cloud Atlas that's even more difficult though to keep people on board with is that it is like a 3-hour long movie.
Yes.
And so when it has a bad rap as being a bad movie and it's 3 hours, it's like really hard to convince people to go on that journey with you.
Yeah. What, on the other hand, is a film that you used to love, you loved it, and then you've watched it recently and you've gone, oh no, I don't like this anymore, for whatever reason that might be.
This is kind of a cheat. Because I haven't watched it all that recently, but for me, it is The Blind Side. I used to be such a staunch like defender of The Blind Side. I really did. Like I was like, so like, yes, Sandra Bullock deserved for that fucking wig work that she did in that film. yes, it is a Lifetime movie, but it is so beautifully done. And I think the thing that you have to understand about me is I was sort of half kicked out of my home at 17 and moved out and was taken in by another family that like didn't really know who I was. And I was not gifted at football. That's where the stories sort of diverge. But I was really drawn to this story of this like, you know, and I hate to say it because I said it so many times during the press tour for my movie, but chosen family. Like I was really drawn to this idea as like both an adoptee, someone who lived with a different family than theirs for the latter half of high school, and was like really loved and accepted by that family and found the support that they couldn't find at home in that family. Like, I really loved this movie when I was in high school and early college. Now, have I since sort of come to understand sort of a lot of the problematic nature of like the white savior narrative, and also now the stuff that has come out recently with Michael Orr coming out and being like, it was not, you know, they like took advantage of me and it wasn't all like the movie portrayed it to be and all of this stuff. I have come around and been like, no, this movie is bad and it should be burned in a big bonfire.
It's nice that you're related to it. I like that.
Yeah. And also, like, clearly, listen, I'm the biggest Sandra Bullock stan. Like, if I had to pick an actress and only watch their movies for the rest of my life, like, Sandra Bullock would probably be at the top of my list, to be honest. Choice. But yeah, she didn't deserve it. She didn't deserve it. Not for that. I think it was, I do think she did deserve a career win. Like, I think The Blind Side was rewarding her for an illustrious career where she gave us a lot, especially in movies that aren't Oscar bait. And yeah, so she did deserve it in that sense, but not for that role. But that happens a lot. That happens a lot.
I think the Oscars often is giving an award for previous work that was missed out on.
Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school? I am. I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity. So I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree, or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term program. That's right! They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre, and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia, and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu.
Thanks, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
What is the film that means the most to you? Not necessarily the film itself is good, but the experience you had watching it will always make it meaningful to you. Joel Kim Booster.
This could probably be my answer for a lot of these questions, but for me, it is My Best Friend's Wedding.
Yes.
And it is, if we were playing the newlywed game, My boyfriend would accurately guess this as my favorite movie. And it's like such a, you know, because that game, the idea of having a favorite movie is so silly and dumb. You know, like, it's really hard to pinpoint. Like, if you watch more than fucking, you know, 25 movies in your life, like, it's so hard to pick a favorite one, you know, because like so much of it, Matt, is like what your mood is and like what you're looking for and like genre dependent and all this stuff. But for me, I tell people if they really press me that this is my favorite movie, because it is the movie that I watch with people to sort of like check them a little bit. I remember watching this with my boyfriend and like it was one of the many cultural exchanges that we did, where I was just sitting on the couch watching his reaction to all of these moments in the movie and making sure that, and I didn't tell him beforehand, but I think he instinctually knew, like he needed to love this movie for us to continue. And it's a movie that like has had this place in my life since I was like in middle school, basically. I saw it way too young, well before I understood what was going on. And then throughout my life, like in high school and in college, in my early days in Chicago, in my early days in New York, like it is a movie that I continually return to as like a way to connect with other people. Like this is the thing that I share in terms of movies, to connect with someone and to like sort of give them a peek at my brain and like the things that I like, because it does have, it has so much going for it. It is such a funny movie. It's a romantic movie. It's a beautifully shot movie, incredible performances. Sort of the first time, like a revolutionary move to make Julia Roberts the sneaky villain of the movie, because she was America's sweetheart at this time.
Yeah.
It was really like this performance could only have been pulled off by Julia Roberts in that moment in history, because you had to take someone who was literally beloved by every single person in America and the world, and then make them do some of the most despicable things that you could ever believe a person would do in a romantic comedy, and still have the audience like kind of root for you throughout the most of it. Like it's a magic trick. And it's like, there's magical realism in it too. Like I love the singing at the fucking restaurant. Like when the movie decides to become a musical for a brief moment for no reason, and it never pops up again. And it's like this moment that is not like addressed by anybody else in the film as being weird. And I think also like written by a gay guy, obviously you can tell, because the gay character in it, George, is so, it is for, especially for the time, well rendered. And like, yes, it is tropey because he is the gay best friend, whatever. But gay best friends exist. That's not like, you know, like, and if you're going to have a gay best friend in a movie, this is a really good starting off blueprint for how to do it well. I think there's ways to push the form now.
Mm-hmm.
But this, especially for the time, I think was really revolutionary for the way that like it gave that character had agency. That character is smart and funny and all of the things that you want to see in a gay best friend, and not necessarily all sort of by the book and the stereotype. So yeah, there's a lot of things I love about this movie, and it is a movie that I will show people in my life to make sure that they're cool.
It's the test. That is a fantastic, perfect answer. What is the film you most relate to?
Oh, what if I said The Blind Side? the film that I actually did think about this one a little bit, because this is a difficult one for sure. And there's some recency bias, I think, in my answer. And it's a little odd, but like Past Lives was a movie that came out this year that I found myself really, really relating to on a lot of different odd levels, you know, because I think like, so I'm adopted, my parents are white, so I had very little contact with my culture or heritage growing up. And I think like, obviously this movie is so much about dysphoria surrounding your identity as an Asian American, and like having roots in a different country, and then also be experiencing, you know, how you experience that when you're sort of drowning in whiteness surrounding you. And also I have a white boyfriend as well, who will never truly fulfill me on a deep level because he's white.
But he did like my best friend's wedding. So
yeah, no, true. But yeah, I haven't watched a movie in a long time that didn't sort of beat for beat try to recreate my own life. Without like actually, like I have not experienced what this character has experienced, but I felt so deeply a kinship with this character. And also Return to Seoul is another, talk about recency bias. Both of these movies came out this year, and both of these movies sort of explore the experience. And Return to Seoul, even more than Past Lives, is like really explicitly about an adopted Korean adoptee returning to South Korea and not having like this life-changing, like, eat, pray, love, like, you know, full circle moment to their experience of that culture. And that I related to on a really deep level too, because I find that like people love to tell you like, just wait until you go back to Korea. It's going to change you. And like, maybe it will. I haven't done it yet. But watching this movie, I was sort of like, oh, finally like a depiction of this experience that isn't about I feel complete now because I've touched down on my ancestral homeland, you know, like it dealt with it in a way that felt real and complicated. And that is how I feel about my own adoption. And so those two movies, it's a tandem answer, definitely are movies that spoke to my experience in different ways that I really related to. And I'm really grateful to that they came out now at a time when like I'm able to process those stories in a way that is helpful to me.
Mm. You said you weren't prepared for this podcast. This has been some of the most thought out, brilliant answers. This is like you said it was new material. I don't believe you. what is the sexiest film you've ever seen? Jolkin Booster.
That's a tough one because like there's so many different layers to that question. Like you could mean like, what? Oh, I mean, I guess for me, the sexiest movie that I've ever seen and sort of the pinnacle of like sex in movies for me is Short Bus.
Great film.
By John Cameron Mitchell. I mean, famously, the sex in that movie is, a lot of it is not simulated. It is real. Yeah. Like when they're giving head, they're giving head. It's very Brown Bunny, Vincent Gallo, whatever. But like, for me, that movie treats sex as this like beautiful, funny, not all that sacred. Like there is a sacred nature to sex, but it doesn't like treat it as this like holy thing that like, you know, has to be special and like handled with kid gloves. Like it, a lot of the sex in that movie, and this is true to my own experience having sex, is very funny. You know, they're laughing. It is, because like when you take away a lot of the bells and whistles to it, it's like you're fucking naked doing what? You did what with what? And put it where? You know, like it is so funny. And like, especially the trappings around sex, the things we do to get sex are so funny. And I love the exploration of that in that movie. And I just loved, for me growing up in a very puritanical house, watching this movie in college, that I'll never forget where I was when I first saw it. I was like, it was the summer between my freshman and sophomore year. And I was in a dorm because I was performing at a summer stock theater. And I remember watching this movie and it shaping me. I mean, it's not only the sexiest movie that I think I've seen, but it really did like shape a lot of my conceptions about sex in movies and how it should be handled and not handled. And sort of the goal for me, if I ever, you know, continue to have sex in movies is to, you know, model it after the way John handled it in his film.
Really good. There's a subcategory to this question. Troubling boners, worrying why-don'ts. What's a film you found arousing that you weren't sure you should?
This is going to be a little too revealing, and so I'm not going to elaborate too much on it.
Okay.
But Funny Games.
Okay. That is a really good answer. That makes a lot of sense. I think I can fill in the blanks. Really, really good answer. What is objectively the greatest film of all time? Might not be your favorite, but it is the pinnacle of films.
Yeah, I mean, this would have been an easy slot in for My Best Friend's Wedding as well, certainly. But I guess for me, I'm going to go with the other answer that I often have to this question, which is Wet Hot American Summer. I think it's, I mean, for one, it's a nice catch-all because it is so many movies at once. There's so much going on in that movie. And again, talk about a movie that like shaped me. I say this often, that the two movies that shaped my aesthetic and like my, you know, conception of what a comedy movie and a sex movie should be is Short Bus and Wet Hot American Summer. Mm. Those were the only two DVDs I owned the summer between my freshman and sophomore year. And I watched both those movies like at least a couple times a week for like 3 months straight. And you put those movies together and that is exactly what I want to accomplish. But my Wet Hot is like, part of it for me is not even the product itself, but Wet Hot was also another movie where I watched the making of featurette for that movie over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. Because it really sold me on wanting to make movies, because I was like, look at these people. They're all friends. You know, they pulled from this like cadre of like comedians, UCB performers that all knew each other and all were in community together. And it so shows on in the final product, like how much fun they had making this and how like grungy it was to make. But at the same time, like because they were all friends and knew each other and peers, that like it was okay. And like that was like, honestly, like I thought about it a lot while I was making Fire Island, because I felt very similarly Because like watching that featurette, the making of Wet Hot featurette, like it made me want to make movies. And then the whole time I was making Fire Island, I was like, oh my God, I'm doing it. I'm making like sort of a small budget movie where the conditions are not always ideal, but I'm here with some of my best friends and people that like are people that I came up with. And yeah. It was such a nice full circle moment for me. And so that is why for me, because it made me want to make movies and got me really interested in making movies, Wet Hot is my answer.
God damn, you're good at this. What is the film you could or have watched the most over and over again? And it might be Short Bus. It might be Short Bus.
It's probably Short Bus or Wet Hot. But I think outside of those movies, the one that I weirdly have watched the most is Rachel Getting Married.
I fucking love that film. It's a great film.
As an adult, post-college, it is by far the movie that I've watched the most over and over again. Because for a couple of reasons. A, it's my writer's block movie. Mm. Like when I'm having writer's block, writing anything creative, I will watch Rachel Getting Married. Because for me, it's kind of like the platonic ideal of like writing like those types of movies, like movies that are plays, but movies. Yeah. Movies where people are talking, you know, because that is like really what I write and write well and want to write is movies where people are talking. Movies that could and should probably be plays.
Yeah.
You know, because dialogue is in and the rhythm of conversation is so much what I'm interested in as a writer, or what certainly got me interested in writing. And I think is probably one of my bigger strengths as a writer. And Jonathan Demme just like does that in that movie so well. And like, Anne Hathaway has like one of the greatest performances of her career, I think, in that film. Again, like I love how small you can feel the budget is, but what they did with it. And like, I obviously love a wedding movie.
Yeah.
Two of my favorite movies of all time are wedding comedies. Dramedy in this case, I guess. Drama maybe fully. But the other reason I love it and the reason I watched it so much is I worked at a video rental store for 4 years. Started in high school and then worked on it. Moved to my college branch and I got fired for checking out Rachel Getting Married without paying for it. And this was a practice that most of the employees at Family Video were engaged in the entire 4 years that I worked there. No one said boo. No one gave a shit if you took out a dollar movie for a couple of days without telling anybody. But I was working with like this new kid who was very Christian and like ratted on me immediately.
Oh, no.
And then like texted me and was like, you put me in a horrible position when you did that in front of me. And I was like, okay, fucking loser. So I got fired for having this movie. And so for a while, it was like, again, one of the few DVDs that I had. And it was just the source of like ire. And I was like, well, if I fucking lost my job of 4 years for this movie, I'm going to watch the shit out of this movie. And so it was this movie that I had to return to just out of spite for a lot of years. Yeah, I would watch it. So it holds a very special. Now. Yeah.
It's a great film. What's the worst film you ever seen?
That's tough because I've brought up like bad movies that I find enjoyable. And I tend to, so it's like, for me, a bad movie has to like say absolutely nothing and be sort of surface level. And like, I don't know, like movies that say nothing are sort of the answer to this. I'm trying to see now this is where the lack of preparation is going to bite me in the ass. Cause I could have had a really wonderful answer for this that would have pissed off nobody, you know? I'm trying to think, because like all of the quote unquote bad movies that I've seen recently were Oscar Beatty movies. And even those movies, like even like when you're just like sort of judging them based on like the pack of Oscar movies for that year are like still like even the ones that you're like, oh, this movie was so bad is still like something that is like pretty good. When I'm just like talking to cover as I think of a movie title that again, like this is the hardest one because like you don't like... The rest of the questions you're like, oh, like, how do I seem cool and like chill and like, how do I construct this personality around my taste in movies? And now suddenly I'm like, what movie can I say that won't piss people off? For me, we've revisited this movie recently. Scary Movie, the first one. Now, before you get up in arms, I think the Scary Movie 3 is still holds up, is such a funny movie. Regina Hall, all-timer. You know, like there's so much in the later part of that series that still holds up and is great. Scary Movie 1, it's not even like the woke mind virus has destroyed my brain or anything like that, but it's just not funny. It's just like, it is playing on sort of like the most surface level ideas of like stereotypes. It's not pushing anything. It is like stuff that I heard other middle schoolers say and then doesn't really push beyond that.
Yeah.
Like it's like, oh, we hit a woman. Isn't that funny? Without commenting on like why hitting a woman might be funny or not funny. It is just like as sort of base as that. Like, oh, this character is gay. Isn't that funny? Isn't it funny that this person is gay? And it just like doesn't ask you to think beyond those terms. And so in that way, I just like don't think it holds up we really wanted it to hold up. I really wanted to like reclaim Scary Movie as like, and be sort of provocative about like, ooh, yeah, you thought I would want, you cancel me, because I love Scary Movie, the first one.
But then you're like,
but no, it was a dark time. It was a dark time for movies and like a dark time for that specific kind of spoof movie.
I'd say that's very fair. Now, on the other hand, you're in comedy. You're very funny. What's the film that actually made you laugh the most?
I will say that the movie that has made me laugh the most is, I could have said what Wet Hot for this answer, but I'm going to go with the one that made me laugh the most in the last couple of years, which is Love Actually. A horrendous film by almost almost everything about it is detestable. And yet I cannot stop watching it every year like clockwork and just sitting there. And the way it's like so abrasively bad, but like you cannot help but laugh at it. Like it, like the way my boyfriend and I will sit and watch this movie and laugh at every terrible thing that happens in this movie, not terrible thing that happens to the characters, but terrible thing the movie tries to do to us, you know, it is so ridiculous. And like, how can you watch this movie and not remember that Keira Knightley was like 17 when she shot this movie and not want to laugh and just laugh at this fucking stalker? You know, like, it is the movie that recently made me laugh the most. It is outrageous.
Okay.
Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school? I am. I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity. So I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term program. That's right. They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu. Thanks, Maureen.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Okay, so look, here's the thing. You've been excellent. Your answers have been unbelievably thoughtful and wise. And I don't for a second believe that you didn't give this any thought. And if you didn't, then you're beyond a genius. It's been really brilliant. However, when you were in a carpool with four other people and your car got hit by a truck and you lay there in excruciating pain, dying very slowly, but you couldn't die until two of the other people died. They took ages to die. And then eventually, once they died, you very slowly, very painfully died. And I was walking past with a coffin, you know what I'm like. And I was like, has anyone seen Joel Kim? Where is he? And they said, I think he's in that wreck. He was dying very slowly. And I went, slowly? Oh, God, oh, no, that must be awful. And he went, yeah, no, it was about 4 days. I was like, you just left him there for 4 days. You didn't even take him to hospital. And they're like, nah, it was such a mess. It just seemed like too much work. So we just sort of waited it out. And I was like, oh, fucking hell. Give us a hand then. So we're all sort of pulling bits of you out of this car, getting bits of metal, all sorts. Stuff it all in the coffin. There's more of you than I was expecting, what with all this fucking stuff. The coffin is absolutely jammed. It is rammed. There is only enough room to slip one DVD into the side for you to take across to the other side. And on the other side, it's movie night every night. What fucking movie are you taking to show the people, the druggies of heaven, when it is your movie night, Mr. Joel Kim Booster?
And this ideally would be a movie that I haven't already brought up.
It can be whatever you want. You're presenting this film.
Because I obviously, like, I brought up, you know, showing people my best friend's wedding is that. So that is, like, part of the answer. But for the sake of saying something a little different that still works, that is still honest, is the Garden State DVD, but not the movie, just the making of featurette. Okay. That's what we'd watch every night. The movie doesn't hold up that well. And it's certainly not as much as you'd like it to. If especially we're around the same age, I think like it was a pretty big deal movie for a lot of people at the time. But the featurette, the making of featurette holds up really, really well. And it is another example of this movie. It's much longer than the Wet Hot one, but it is another example of a featurette really making me interested in the art of filmmaking and like the community around which movies are made and like the community that comes together to make a movie and the solidarity and the fun and the intricacies and like the breadth and like scope of what goes into making a movie, you know, like I think like that was a huge watching that featurette in high school. I was like, wow, there are a lot of people, even on this little tiny indie movie, that work on this. It's not just the director and the actors and the writer, you know, and like understanding that I think is a really important part of learning how to digest movies. And so I would want everybody in on that. So we would watch the featurette over and over again.
That is a fucking great answer. Joel Kim Booster, is there anything you would like to tell people to look out for, to watch, to come see you in coming up?
I am on a new show called Chrissy and Dave Dine Out that's on Freeform and then Hulu the next day that comes out. The end of January, I think like the 24th, something like that. It's a quick 5-episode little series where we eat at a lot of different restaurants around LA. And then I am, the second season of Luke comes out in April or somewhere around there. So keep your eyes peeled for that. That's coming. And then hopefully I learn a lot of other stuff soon.
And guys see his stand-up. Joel Kim Booster, thank you so much for doing this. You've been absolutely brilliant.
Thank you.
I hope you have a wonderful death. And I will see you soon.
Okay.
Good day to you, sir. So that was episode 282. Remember to head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for all the extra stuff with Joel. Look up dates for my stand-up show if you want to come see me and you're in America. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. I really hope you're all well. Thank you to Joel for giving me his time. Thank you to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Happy birthday, Buddy Peace. Thanks to iHeartMedia and Will Ferrell's Big Money Players Network for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Liz Lydon for the photography. Come and join me next week for another banging guest. But that is it for now. In the meantime, hope you all have a lovely week. And please, now more than ever, be excellent to each other.
Sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbour Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.